Welcome, welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. We are so excited that you're joining us today, and we're really excited about the topic and about this interview conversation. I want to turn it over to Tim. Tim, our fearless leader. Tim, are you excited about today?
I absolutely am. Thanks, Andrew. I am thrilled to talk to Brad Lominick today. Many of you listening have heard Brad's name before. Maybe you know Brad. But Brad, I was just thinking, I think you and I, in our friendship, go back at least 15 years when you first took Catalyst, or at least became a part of it in the beginning stages. We worked in the same building, and that thing just began to grow like crazy. So we were, even though we weren't seeing each other all the time, I just enjoyed knowing you as a friend and seeing the way you embody these three big ideas that you talk about in the book. So thanks for being with us. Let me quick, Brad, if you don't mind, give an official introduction to you, and then I'm going to start tossing questions to you. Brad Lominick is now a consultant with companies, leaders, executives all over, spent a great deal of his time heading up a gigantic young leader development, really next generation leader development event that later became a series of events called Catalyst. The first one was hosted in Atlanta, and it continues in Atlanta. But now, Brad, Catalyst is in several sites and different times during the year. So, Brad, thank you so much for joining us, and especially for talking about this book you've just finished. Let me say that again. Okay. Thank you for joining us today, Brad, and thank you for being willing to talk about your new book.
Thanks, Tim. Honored to be on, and I was just thinking about when the old days of us being in the same building, and it was like osmosis. We were around each other a lot, but we didn't necessarily, we spend more time together, actually, I think, after we moved out of that building than we did when we were in the building.
I think so. Yeah, that's just such is life. Well, Brad, this book you've completed is really so much you. In fact, I want to compliment you. It's a great book. And I think you really, especially today, I think you even say that in the book, are attempting to embody the ideas. The book is called H3 Leadership. It's about being humble, hungry, and always hustling. So if you don't mind, give us a quick overview of this book and why it might be helpful to readers.
Yeah, well, that's my leadership mantra. So, you know, titles of books, as you know, Tim, mean a lot to authors, because that's really the point where people run into it. And people ask, well, what does that mean? And that's been my leadership mantra since I think I got out of college.
Yeah.
When people would say, hey, how do you define your leadership, or what do you want to be known for as a leader? And I would always say, I want to always be humble. I want to stay hungry, and I always want to hustle. So those three for me have been the definition of my leadership. And even, you know, over the years of Catalyst, when interns would come in and, you know, they're 21, 22, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and they want to change the world. And they would say, what do we need to know? You know, what, pare it down for us, like boil it down to the simplest form. And that's what I would tell them. Like, if you want to excel here on the Catalyst team, you need to embody these three H's. So it makes sense to be a really good title because, you know, it's catchy. It's memorable, but it really is something that I've tried to embody over the course of my 20 years of leading post-college.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, the book covers so much territory. How would you describe it? Those three words are key, but if you and I were in an elevator, we had 2 minutes together, how would you describe it?
Well, you know, the three H's are really the pillars of what I consider to be practical leadership. And then underneath those pillars, what I've tried to do is define 20 habits that will sustain your leadership over time. So basically there's three parts of the book, which are the humble, hungry, and hustle. And then each of those parts, there's anywhere from 6 to 8 habits that are the practical side of what does it look like to actually live out this idea of humble, hungry, and hustle. So the habits are really the game plan. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I want to read books at least that hopefully are practical and I can apply and have application and implementation to them. And I love books that are high in the sky and esoteric and philosophical, but I really love books even more that I can put into practice. And so everything in the book is geared towards, you know what, this can be put in today into your leadership game. And this is a dirty fingernail leadership book, and meaning that like, it's built on my struggles and a lot of the things I've learned that I didn't do well, as well as watching other leaders who I admire. And then that sense of, you know what, like, the playbook is more important today than necessarily the handbook. Yeah, and the handbook is great. Like, again, we need that, but, and I want the playbook. I want the game plan for, like, this weekend's game on Saturday. And so that hopefully is the premise of when people read the book, they'll get out of it is, you know what, like, there was five things in there that I put into practice.
Yep.
Like, yep.
Brett, that's what I loved about the book. In fact, what I thought maybe it would be in the beginning is really here's some characteristics. And it seems like there's a million books out there today on the characteristics of leader, but it really is more about here's some practical habits. And I was, I'm partway through the book actually, but I was just thinking I can do that tomorrow. And that's what I love. So that's really cool. Now,
well,
Brett,
go ahead. Oh, sorry. I was going to say the, you know, the book that really resonated with me a couple of years ago that I actually was inspired by was Charles Duhigg's The Power of Habit.
Mm-hmm.
And that book was, it was like, man, habits are so important. And I thought, well, what about leadership habits? Is there anything that really has been written or put into play around leadership habits? And I couldn't find anything. And so again, like the premise of this is that if you want to be a good leader, you have to work at it. And leadership is hard work. You know,
absolutely.
So it has to be habitual. You have to put habits in place in order to, you can't just wing it as a leader. You have to actually put things in place, a system in place that will sustain you, but also make you better over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk real quick about some of the nitty gritty of the book. Part of the impetus for this book, I understand, is the sabbatical you took, where in the peak of your career, where things were going better than ever in terms of numbers and money and everything else, you stopped. You pushed the pause button on your career and your life because you wanted to just do a reset in many ways. Would you talk about that? You're very open and honest about how you've led in the past. You were certainly hustling, but in some ways you might have been heading toward burning out. Talk about that real quick.
Well, I think a lot of leaders will resonate with this. You know, anybody who's led for a while, there's these points where you don't feel like you're doing that well.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, sort of the pinnacle and the intersection of, I turned 40. I was leading this organization that was really built around young leaders. I was, you know, we were sort of at the top of the rocket ride in terms of up and to the right. The measurement of everything measurable was success. You know, most leaders that we had ever gathered in 2012 and 2013, and, you know, everything was just going great. But me as a leader, like, my own leadership was stale. And I started to realize that the people who were closest to me were getting the worst of me. And this is a huge leadership landmine for anybody who's led. Is the more popularity, success, power, influence, authority you gain, the less likely you are to give the people closest to you the best of you.
Yeah.
And so, man, it was just a game changer for me. And wait, I got to stop and reevaluate some things and make sure that the leadership that I'm defined by is first and foremost built on, are the people closest to me flourishing? And so that was a big part of stepping back. And really out of that break, that sabbatical, that I would say it wasn't a leadership crisis. You know, that would be I think it would be too dramatic to call what I was experiencing, but it was just that sense of the slow, steady decline
was starting
to potentially derail who I was as a leader. And so I had to stop and pause. And out of that pause, really, for me, it was redefining who I was as a leader. So much of that then, the story became, hey, you know what? Like, I need to step out of running catalyst, not because I was a bad leader, but just because the timing was right on that. Well as then, hey, here's some lessons that I learned from this point where I was that I could pass on to other leaders. And the biggest one, Tim, is, I think, you know, the reason we start the book with self-discovery, like a habit of self-discovery, is the issue of identity. And for all of us as leaders, we have to remember that who we are is not defined by what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many of us that we get into a vocation or or a job or an assignment. And as soon as we step away from that, like, we sort of lose every bit of who we are. And I had to wrestle with that of, like, if I'm not the catalyst guy anymore, does anybody really want to talk to me? Like, do I still get invited to the cool gatherings? And, you know, do I have still have a seat at the table? And I had to just come to that point of understanding that, no, like, I'm not the catalyst guy. That's a season.
Yes.
And it's an assignment for me, but it's not necessarily the identity of who I am. And that was a huge lesson.
No doubt about it. So it's really who before what? That's the key here.
Absolutely. Yeah. No question. Yeah. And, you know, and then out of your what, then you start to figure out, like, well, what is it that I'm supposed to do? And what's my job and what's my assignment? And even, you know, a habit of assignment is another chapter that I think we don't have time to go into it in depth, but man, I think it's so important today for young leaders to understand. And you're the expert on this, like, that the new reality for so many young leaders is free agency.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that's good or bad, but if we don't get our sense of identity being the most important, calling then coming underneath that, and then assignment actually defining what our calling is, we're gonna wrestle with this for a long time, because, you know, the average 20 something today is gonna have what, 10 or 15 at least different seasons of career potentially.
Yeah, no doubt about it. In fact, you're right. It's not just different jobs, maybe different industries. So,
you're jumping around. And if you don't understand your true identity and make sure you don't connect your what, that your you know, your who is not defined just by your what, because all of a sudden your what is changing every 2 or 3 years. So you're dealing with schizophrenic identity.
It's true.
Unless you're, like, truly dialed in to, man, I know who I am at my core.
So, Brett, in light of this conversation we're having right now, let's talk for a minute. I want you just to share really genuinely from your own observations. Which of these habits that you talk about in the book would you say that perhaps millennials struggle the most with? You just mentioned one right there. Talk more about that.
Well, assignment is a big one. And with the, you know, I was just yesterday looking at a bunch of articles on this new phrase, the gig economy. You know, the idea that you just got these different gigs that now define you in terms of your seasons of career. And, you know, I think now we're almost up to 40% of the workforce today is free agent. They're gig economy people. They're project-based. They're self-employed.
Yeah.
And so this is just, it's more important than ever that a leader is really, really intent and also intentional about who they are, their sense of identity. Because otherwise, you're just going you're going to move around all over the map. Another one, Tim, is a habit of execution, and this one is so important, not just for young leaders, but anyone in leadership today, but especially for those who are coming up. Because the way you gain credibility, I think, the quickest as a young leader is you get things done.
Yeah.
And you take something and whatever the assignment is, whatever the project is, you kill it. You make it happen. You take it across the finish line. You ship it, as Seth Godin says. You're getting things out of the warehouse. And you're also at the same time doing that with a habit of excellence and that sense of a standard that is really high. So I believe more than ever that because we've flattened structures in companies, we're pushing more accountability to the size and to the down into the chain of command of organizations, that the way you will rise quickest is you're able to make things happen. And you know, all of us are so short-sighted today, because we want to be in the place of power. We want to start the new social innovation company. We want to be we want to move to the top of the food chain faster than is normal. And I would just say that the fastest way for you to gain credibility is to do your now as good or better than you will do your next.
Yeah.
And man, that is just such a huge lesson that I want to invest into the next generation at every level.
Love it. In fact, Brad, as I'm listening to you talk and I'm thinking about the book itself, in many ways, that's the meta competency, isn't it? Just execution. It's almost the one that trumps everything else. Would you agree with that?
No question. Yeah. And I mean, hustle to me, like people are, I've had some people say, well, Brad, like hustle, I mean, come on. That's like, that's a word we don't use in leadership. I'm like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
I think, you know, and there's a level of hustle that has to be vetted appropriately.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't run over people.
Right.
But execution and that, just that sense of regardless of whether I am the intern or I'm the CEO, I have to be willing and always focused on building a culture of making things happen. And I have to be willing to get into the trenches today more than ever to actually make things happen, even if that's not my assignment. Like the old days of sitting in the corner office with your feet up, drinking a spritzer, barking out orders to your people.
Yeah.
You know, the command and control is just, that's such the old school model of leadership. And there are still pockets where that works, but the majority of organizations today,
that's right.
You watch those who are excelling and they have a leader or leaders that are willing to get into the trenches with their team.
Yeah.
It definitely is. It's the undercurrent of the book and it's the undercurrent of my own leadership.
Yeah.
That's regardless good. Of the things I did, you know, well, regardless of the things I've done well or not done well over the years, I think if you ask people who've been on my teams in the past, they would say, you know what, Brad is the kind of leader that will follow because there's never something that's beneath him. Like he will always be willing to jump in and help us move things across the finish line. And it doesn't mean you micromanage. That's a big,
right.
That's a big distinction here. Cause a lot of leaders will say, well, I do that. And their teams will say, no, you're killing me. Like you're actually like you're creating barriers for me to actually execute. So don't micromanage, but when it's appropriate, you have to be willing to get in the middle of things and make sure they're actually executing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we live in a day where we're running and gunning. Most all of us listening to this are just, if we're not high energy, we feel like we need to be to get all that our job asks us to do. Our soul is being demanded of us. And I think that's just true in many people I know. So if you don't mind, let's go back to the sabbatical you mentioned earlier. You go into a great deal of detail in your book about your personal sabbatical, and then you emphasize how important sabbaticals are for leaders. Sounds like yours was pretty life-changing. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and this was for me, this was also a point in my own journey that was a preventative measure. And the reason I say that, Tim, is because when we think about our leadership, there's preventative and there's prescriptive.
Yeah.
And preventative is something you do before something bad happens. Prescriptive is something typically that you do because something bad has happened, it's a cause and effect. It's a result of something. And for me, the preventative side of this was a friend of mine who was integral, a guy named Steve Cochran. He looked at me and he said, "Hey, you're done. Like I can see it in your eyes. You're the prize fighter that will stay in the ring until they absolutely get knocked out. You won't bow out. Like and most leaders I know won't bow out. They have to be kicked out."
Yes, yes, and, exactly.
And that's because we're ambitious. It's because we're go for it. It's because we're, you know, we want to make things happen and we are humble. I mean, we are hustlers. And so many times we have to protect ourselves from ourselves, right?
Yeah,
like we have to be willing to put systems in place that will actually keep us from destroying the things we built, because we're so focused on the end goal that we start losing sight of where we are in the journey.
Yeah,
and people around us are in the ditch and they're like, you know, they're crying and they're stuck in their thumb, and you look at them and you go, what is wrong with you? And they want to say, listen, you're the worst leader I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you don't even realize it. You know, so the reason that sabbaticals and rest and margin are so important is because that has to be the counterbalance of an ambitious life. And if we don't put that in place, we will burn out. Eventually the redlining of our cars and our engines will take us out.
Yeah.
And some of the time it takes us out way early. Some of the time it takes us out way later than we thought it would. But for me, a sabbatical and rest was preventative leadership. And without it, I don't know. I can't honestly say that I would have like gone over the cliff. But it was, again, that slow, steady decline where I needed to reboot. I needed to turn off the computer and reboot, you know, like let the computer sort of start back up again. And otherwise I just had so many windows open, you know, like on my computer that it eventually just quit working. It just froze, you know, and it was about to freeze.
I know it's not funny, but it's so true. I think everybody listening can identify with this. There's so many balls in the air, so many plates that are spinning, so many windows that are open on the stupid computer. I don't know that we even think we can take that time, but you're right. We have to. Somewhere along the way, we realize the world will continue if I step away for a while and just get my stuff together.
That's a huge lesson. Gosh, that's so well said. Like, you think that the world revolves around you, and if you step away, that things will crash, and it's just the opposite. I mean, I've never heard of a leader, at least in my world, who stepped away and everything just absolutely tanked.
Yeah, right. Me either.
You know, most of the time it starts going up. I mean, because you have people who are then released to step up and step in and take on more stuff, and they will. Like, that's the thing. Like, we think, oh gosh, the sky's going to fall, and you know, so your best. That's the thing about leaders. Like, we will destroy the thing that we've helped build without even realizing it.
Yeah.
And you see it on sports teams. You see it in politics. You see it in business. You just see it in every industry where everybody around you is going, okay, the writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
You're the only one not seeing it.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and once again, it goes back to some of the fundamentals of emotional intelligence, my self-awareness, my social awareness. These are soft skills, but we get caught up in the hard skills of planning a strategy, or in your case, planning an incredible event, but then realizing even if I do that logistically, I may be dying on the inside. And again, like you said, don't even know it. So that's.
Yeah. And I think I would have, I think at my core, again, you know, I have to ask the question, what's the true success measurement of leadership?
Yeah. What's the report card?
If I'm unhealthy, first of all, and I have a healthy organization, that's an F scorecard. So, and if my team is starting to become unhealthy, that's an F scorecard. Even though I have a healthy organization and it's successful and it's up and to the right. And that was just a huge lesson for me too, it's at the end of the day, like if I've become this dysfunctional leader, but the organization's still winning, what's my grade?
Yeah.
And I don't think my grade is an A in that case.
Yeah, absolutely. Brad, one of your most powerful ideas in the book is really about creativity and innovation. You argue that it's not something people are just born with, that it's a habit that can be developed and cultivated. When did you realize this?
Well, I realized it primarily with my work at Catalyst because I all of a sudden was pushed into a role where I was leading something that was really creative and that was at its core innovative, that had elements, lots of elements, whether it was marketing or branding or websites or programming or the overall experience that was way beyond my sense of being a creative leader. And I felt always kind of like this fake that it was going to be found out, you know, really fast. Like, Brad, you're not that good. Like, you don't have those kind of ideas and you're not that innovative. And this is reserved for people who are way more creative than you and wear like skinny jeans and come into meetings with scarves on. And they, you know, they get on the whiteboard and they go crazy. And what I had to realize over time, Tim, was that's not true. First of all, I am creative. I just go about it in a different way. Mm-hmm. And my creativity was more based out of a process. So I could bring lots of ideas to the table because I was willing to put a process in place where I was sort of a hunter gatherer of ideas. I mean, I come up with all the ideas, but I was a hunter gatherer in the sense that I'm a list guy. Like, I take lists and I write lists and I have lists everywhere. And so I could walk into a creative brainstorming meeting and I could have 10 ideas. that weren't necessarily mine, but I found them in other places. And that was a process. So that it wasn't just built on the people who ideate.
Yeah.
It was built on the system that says we believe in creativity and innovation, and we're willing to create a process and a system within our organization that allows for it. And the other piece of that is you got to let things stew. Like so many times as organizations and teams, we think, well, we have to come up with something right now. Like what's the next great innovative idea? And we found over the years at Catalyst that the best ideas many times started out bad, or at least average, and then we built on those. And after reading Ed Catmull's book, Creativity Inc., this was validated because Catmull, as the founder of Pixar, along with John Lasseter, one of the most creative organizations in the world, he would say, man, most of our films, when we see the first cut, they're awful.
Yeah.
But we build on it. We have a system in place that we build on a film until the final product is something that is so good that we would have never thought we could create that in the first place. So let the system, the process, allow for breathing room to let things be more creative over time.
Yeah, I love it. In fact, you reminded me of Carol Dweck's idea that we got to get away from a fixed mindset and get into a growth mindset that, you know, it's just not there yet, but we're continuing to work. That's what America was built on, for Pete's sake. But certainly that's what leaders have to be built on. So that's so good.
And you got to make sure too that you don't just have a bunch of half-baked ideas that are all sitting on the shelf and nothing. Again, go back to the habit of execution.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to push things across the finish line. So And you got to kill things. That's the other piece. Like you got to be creative. You have to be willing to shoot ideas in the head.
Literally, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, no, you're exactly right. That's true. We need to have funerals sometimes in the office for ideas and projects that worked back in '88, but not today. So.
Yeah.
Brad, we have time for one more question, and I want you to say what you want to say. But this is so rich. I love the idea. Be humble, stay hungry, always hustle. Those are fundamentals. I mean, it sounds like a coach with a ball club, you know, and I just love the mantra. I really do. But I want you to say what you want to say. But my last question is, when we think about the macro scene, the environment, the culture, the world that we live in, what do you think the world needs most from leaders today?
I think the world needs leaders who are incredibly 100% off the chart authentic. And you know, we live in a world that is so fake many times.
Yeah, artificial.
Yes. And especially the next generation have grown up in a world where they are starving for something that's real.
And
they'll follow real versus relevant every time. You know, they'll follow authentic versus perfect. And I just believe that today more than ever, that the way you actually gain currency as a leader is just be real, be you, be authentic, be vulnerable, be honest. And I hear so many people who I respect and admire saying the same thing. And I think that is the place to start as a leader. And you don't have to have it all together, but you do have to be so incredibly self-aware and willing to walk into the room and you know, as Patrick Lencioni says, show your pit stains.
Yeah.
And the old days when we would hide and we were sort of like, man, I hope nobody sees that I'm sweating. Lencioni would say, no, just walk in like with your arms raised, going, look at that, guys. Isn't that awesome? You know, look at those pits, man.
I've been working hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a paradigm shift as a leader.
It really is.
So I believe that one is the place to start. And regardless of whether you're 25 or 75, you can do that. Like, it doesn't take talent to be authentic. It just takes a willingness to say, I'm going to walk into the room and lead from who I truly am.
Yeah. Which goes back to that identity thing. I'm emotionally secure enough to be who I really am. Yeah.
You got it. You got it.
Brad, this is fantastic. First of all, thanks for being so rich today with just what you're sharing. And it's, I know it's only the tip of the iceberg of what you've put in the book. These habits are fantastic. So again, my friend, thank you for being with us. Thanks for sharing. And I'm going to turn it back over to Andrew to talk about how they can get the book.
Yeah. If you're like,
thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
If you're like me, listening to this conversation thinking, I have to read that book, we definitely want you to do that. We encourage you to go on over to h3leadership.com to check out his book there. You can also get it at Amazon or anywhere where you get your books. But definitely check out that that website. We also want to encourage you, if you love conversations like this, if you are involved in leadership and really want to take your personal leadership to the next level, we want to invite you to come to our National Leadership Forum. It's coming up next summer, June 23rd and 24th here in Atlanta. So we're really excited about that coming up. Check out growingleaders.com to find out more information about that. But again, thank you so much, Tim. Thank you, Brad. Incredible conversation. Really appreciate it.